Good morning, and welcome to yet another episode of Popping Off with Phil, the podcast. Happy Tuesday, co-host. We're here another week, still social distancing, still sheltering in place, still quarantining, but hey, we're doing it for the good of not just ourselves, but for others, so it's well worth it. I want to thank each and every one of you who took the time out to listen, to post and repost, to share last week's interview with my good friend Angela Burchett, who portrayed Jackie Clark Chisholm in the Clark Sister movie that premiered on Lifetime in early April. At this point, almost a month ago, actually. And just thank you for supporting me and for supporting her, for supporting the movie. It was a good time. We had a good time. We talked about a lot of things. And so if you haven't got an opportunity to check it out, please go and do that. It is, of course, available here at Anchor, but it's also available on Spotify and Google and Apple Podcasts and a few other podcast-specific apps that I'm not aware of because I don't use them. I know like Pocket Cast, but there are several others. But nonetheless, go check it out. You'll really enjoy it. It was a really good interview. We had a really good time, opportunity to catch up. You know, I've talked a lot about pandemic stuff and just the overall attitude from just random musings about being in a pandemic and what it meant and experiencing it for the first time in my lifetime, because there's nothing like this that has ever occurred that's kind of locked things down. I mean, granted, September 11th was traumatic, and it did cause the country to halt and stop. But like, I still went to school, like, you know, unless you were like in the tri-city area, I think most people kind of went on business as usual. You know, it was a day where we all stopped, but we definitely, like, schools weren't closed. There wasn't this extended period of time where we were doing unusual things in terms of our day to day. So this is really different. It's really different. And I've had a couple of episodes just talking about taking this time to be introspective, because at the end of the day, after you've had all of this time to be by yourself, for those of us who are by ourselves, all this time to be by ourselves, it's great to come out of this better, improved, figuring out things that you can change. But, you know, having conversations with some of my friends, I realized that everybody is not necessarily thriving in this period of time. And granted, we all have different situations. And so it's taken, you know, it's given me an opportunity to kind of think about my situation juxtaposed to some others. And I don't really have an explanation as to why I feel the way that I do. I have some ideas because I've talked about it in therapy, but I'm fortunate because I do live alone. And so a lot of people, you know, that I've spoken to, you know, some friends, they're married, they have children. So they're not just at home working from home. Those who are fortunate to work at home, which is a whole nother thing. So if you are fortunate enough to work for a company or an organization or an entity that allows you to continue to work from home and not really lose a beat, like you're still able to get your check, you're still able to take vacation if you need, they're putting policies in place to help you out financially, then that's great. And that's not necessarily everybody's situation. So one, I'm privileged in that way that I work for a company that allows that I'm able to do my job from home and still do a quality job. You know, it's not a hack job. It's a job that is representative of the type of work that we do. So I'm grateful, but I'm also alone. So because I'm alone, I don't have to worry about being a partner or a spouse to someone and, you know, obviously catering to that person's needs. I don't have to worry about children, homeschooling them, cooking and making sure that they're eating, keeping them active. And even kids who are, you know, possibly going to like daycare, like smaller kids, like, you know, creating those activities to make sure that they're not losing you're not losing aptitude, because, you know, when you're in a regular setting, you know, where you're going to school or you're going to daycare, like they have activities and you're painting, you're learning letters and different things like that. And so as a parent of a small child, if you are home with that child, of course, you have to stimulate them educationally as well. Like, it's not just all playtime. And so I don't have that to worry about. I'm not necessarily in a position where I'm in a home with somebody, be it a roommate or a friend or a spouse or somebody that I'm like beefing with, or we're not seeing eye to eye. So like, I'm totally by myself. So my situation is different. And it just caused me to think that we should be sure to check in on each other and see how people are doing from a mental health standpoint. Because everybody isn't doing well, you know. People who started off doing well are starting to slip a little bit. You know, people are having anxiety who've never had anxiety before. You know, people are worried and panicky about certain things that they weren't worried before, you know. Because people have things on the books. People had trips planned. People have weddings scheduled. And, you know, as this thing progresses, as it lingers, because people won't stay their black ass at home, or their white ass at home, or their ass at home. Whatever color your ass is, people are not staying their asses at home. And so, you know, it creates, we're not able to flatten the curve like we want to. We're putting more and more people at risk. It's one of those situations where people are starting to get a little weary and a little worried about things that they weren't worried about before. You know, this is very different for me because I'm a Virgo, and I do worry about a lot of things. I won't necessarily say I'm an anxious person. I don't think I suffer from anxiety, but I am a worry wart in a sense. And I think my approach throughout this entire thing has been, my main concern was I really am not in a position to not be able to work. And because my job requires me to travel, I didn't know what that was going to look like. And they've made a suitable adjustment. I'll leave that at that. They've made a suitable adjustment to where I can still perform my job duties remotely and being at home, which is great. But that was my main concern. You know, how is my job going to be impacted? Because I still got bills to pay. And, you know, at what point are we going to be able to transition from this coming into the office every day to a working from home scenario for a temporary time or indefinite time, whatever the case is. And once that kind of pans out, I was here. And surprisingly, I just kind of think I've adopted the attitude that I'm not going to concern myself with things that I can't control. Like, I can't control how long this lingers. The only thing I really can control is keeping myself in an isolated space where I am, where I'm staying healthy and not putting myself at risk, which will more than likely put other people at risk, which is my main concern. It really has been my main concern, my concern for other people. I am a relatively healthy person. Not to say that healthy people haven't succumbed to this horrible, horrible virus, but a lot of people who are healthy have had a greater success rate at coming out of this and coming out of this a little faster than some other people who have other challenges and other compromises. But those people are still individuals who could impact other people and create, you know, the snowball effect. So I look at it very much so like my sexual health. My biggest thing has always been not putting myself in a situation to contract something to endanger someone else's health. Not that I don't care about my health, because that's important, but it's nothing worse than knowing that your reckless behavior caused an issue for someone else. And just because I have access to care and access to, you know, to support, doesn't mean that the other person does. So, you know, that's kind of how I've looked at this. I've likened it to that. But, you know, from talking to people, and as the weeks have gone, a lot of people are struggling. Even people who are introverted, who consider themselves to be introverts, are like, I was talking to a friend and they were like, I don't even go to the movies, but I just want to go to the movies. You know, like, that's literally the position people are in, where it's like, I just want to do something that I want to do something because it's something that I want to do. It's so unusual to be in this situation where I just can't. And I think people are struggling with the fact that they just can't do things. They don't like the fact that they can't do things. And I get that, you know. It's funny because people have reached out to me and they're like, well, how are you doing? And I think it's because other people might not be doing great. And so they're curious to see how you might be coping. Because a lot of people know me to be a very people-y person, very social. And like I've said before, I went into this thinking that I didn't think it was going to be a problem. But I definitely went into this space of social distancing and sheltering in place thinking that I was more of an extrovert than I am. And the way that I've kind of explained it is my experience with introverts are introverts typically have some form of anxiety about being out in public. And so even before they leave, they are thinking and romanticizing the return home. It's like, okay, we're going to go out. We're going to be off for about an hour, 2 hours. And then we get to come back home and be in my own space. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of how they look at things. And while they're out, there's a percentage of them that's having a good time. But there's this other percentage of them that's like, okay, when is it enough? Like, when, if I'm with somebody, when are they going to be okay to go? And I'm not that person. Like, when I'm out, when I decide that I'm going to be out, when I've made a choice and I'm going to go out and be social and be amongst the people, I've decided to make that choice and that's what I'm going to do. And there's not a part of me that is like, I can't wait to get back home and just lay out on my couch. When I'm in a space where I don't want to be out, I'm just not out because I do enjoy my own company. And so I was concerned, like, you know, as the weeks went on, I was like, ooh, this is going to get kind of crazy. But I've really taken to the fact that I'm by myself. And I know that I've said this before, you know, I recently, well, this is funny because some people didn't know that I was in a relationship. So it's always surprising when people find out that you were in a relationship and now that you're not. Some people didn't realize that that relationship had ended. So then it's like, oh, well, if I would have known that, I would have said something months ago. And so, you know, that is what it is. But I think for me, the process, and I've talked about this, of course, too, the grieving of loss, like loss is real. And I don't think people equate, you know, grief to anything other than death. But anytime there's a loss, there's typically some form of grief associated with that, be it a job, be it a friend, or not a friend to death, but just a friendship that's ended or it's severed for whatever reason. When you lose something, there's a grieving process. And, you know, there's no timetable on how long that takes or what it looks like. Doesn't mean you have to go through all the stages. One of the things that my therapist told me very early on, the stages of grief are a suggestion. They're not a mandate. No one says that you have to go from anger to rage to, you know, you don't to being depressed to be, you know, you don't have to go through every single stage, but it's likely that you're going to experience either one or two or multiple or, you know, stages of grief at a time. And so being in this space, being alone, allowing myself to be introspective and kind of look back on the relationship, things that went right, things that went wrong. I've enjoyed that time. And it really made me realize that what was kind of going on in my space. Like my space, like when me and my ex first got together, I was in the process of deciding what my next move was going to be. And that next move for me was to relocate. I have a degree in arts administration from Drexel University in Philadelphia. I fought very hard for that degree. I fought very hard to get into a program. I started working at my current company in 2008. And my goal was not to be there long because I knew I wanted to go to grad school, but I wanted to go to school traditionally like everybody else. Like I actually wanted to go to an institution, do my 2 years, and then start my life as an arts administrator, whatever that was or whatever that looked like. And so the first year that I applied, I really wanted to go to like Boston University was one of the things that was high on my list. I had friends who were in Boston who were either attending BU or attending some neighboring universities, colleges. And so I was like, this is where I want to go. Well, the difference between the year that I applied and the year before is that there wasn't a GRE requirement the year before. And I really didn't want to take the GRE. So I applied. They was like, this is great. I'm glad that you sent in your application and we'll hold it till you send in those GRE scores. And so I was like, fuck. And so I ended up applying to Columbia College in Chicago and I was waitlisted. And so of course I was like, well, you know, a delay is not a denial. And so I called and was like, well, so what does this mean? And she was like, well, it pretty much means that you're on the short list. And if we find ourselves in a situation where somebody who's been accepted decides that they're going to defer or that they're not going to come, then we'll start working on the short list. And again, these are lessons that you learn. I don't think I was very persistent. Like I took that information as it was and kind of moved on. I didn't call back on a regular basis. Now, let's be clear. The person that I spoke to was dry as fuck and didn't really seem like she really wanted to help me. It was a matter of fact, this is how the process works. More like, don't call us, we'll call you. We've already sent you the notification. And so I kind of just let it go. Obviously, I didn't get into Columbia. But over that next year, I had done some volunteer work. Like I had really tried to do things to kind of beef up my resume to make me more attractive. I felt like I wrote a much stronger personal statement that second year, which is 2009, a stronger personal statement. So I was really excited. And so I reapplied to Columbia College. Because of course they didn't have a GRE requirement. I was still trying to avoid that. And I applied to like, on a fluke, my best friend was like, just apply to NYU. Let's see, child. That was a hell no. But I mean, it wasn't one of those types of things where I was heavily invested. I pretty much just kind of copied and pasted the application package that I had already put together for Columbia and was like, here it goes. Well, I didn't get into Columbia at all. And so I was devastated because I was like, well, I was waitlisted last year. What could have changed from year to year? Obviously, we know there's a lot of things that could have changed. But in my mind at that time, I was like, what could have changed from last year? Like, I'm a better candidate this year than I was last year by far because of the work that I put in to kind of separate myself. And so I was depressed. And so Drexel University, for people who don't know about this story, was a fluke. I literally got a postcard in the mail and was like, hey, we got an online arts administration program. We're in the second year. If you apply online within the next, it was literally like 48 hours, it seemed. We'll waive, like there's no GRE and we'll waive like the administration fee. So like it was no fee. It was like a free application submission. So I had like a finite period of time to get letters of recommendations. And I remember going to one of my mentors from college, actually director of Glee Club. And I was like, listen, if I don't get into this program, then fuck it. I'm just going to go and apply to graduate school and try to get an MBA. I don't really want an MBA, but I mean, hey. And he was like, the hell you are. If you don't get in, you're going to apply somewhere else. Like, you know, like if this is what you want, then that's what you'll do. Anyway, long story short, got into Drexel, did the program online, was taking like 2 credits a semester. Oh, I'm sorry, a quarter, because they were on quarter system. So literally 4 quarters in a year. So I had finished my program, like the degree program, with an additional 3 hours. So it's like a 42 hour program. I did 45 hours because of like financial aid. By 2012. So I walked in 2012, but I didn't finish my thesis. I didn't finish my thesis till 2015. And I just drug my ass because I was so unmotivated. And it wasn't until I got, you know, they made some changes in the program and the structure. And they had a guy who came in and was like, listen, it shouldn't take this long to complete no thesis. So you guys got until June of this year. And if you don't, then you done. Like, it's over. You know, like, no masters for you. And so obviously I was like, even though I'm not using the degree, even though I haven't transitioned the way that I wanted to transition, there's no way I'm going to blow this fucking money. I've spent way more money for a 2-year degree than I spent for a 4-year degree. Because of course I love private institutions like a dumbass. But anyway, not turning my nose up at Drexel University, just saying that these were the choices that I made. So I was kind of saddled. So anyway, fast forward to 2018, I was like, listen, like, I got to make some changes. Like, I have to make some changes. Like, if I really want to make this work, I'm not really a risk taker, but let me see what I can do. So I have moved in with a friend, asked if I could stay there with him for about 6 months to kind of figure some things out. My hope, my goal, my plan was to secure a job in that time frame. I had applied to some positions in Texas. I applied to positions in Illinois. I had applied to positions in Florida. I had applied to positions in New York. I had applied to positions in Massachusetts. I had applied to positions in New Jersey. I had applied to positions in Pennsylvania. I had contemplated some positions in North Carolina and in Kentucky. Like, I literally was trying to cast a very wide net. Oh, I applied to some positions in California. I think Southern California. I had literally casted a really wide net. No, Northern California, actually. I had casted a really wide net because I was just like, you know, now is the time. Chicago is kind of what I had my eye on because Chicago's 4.5 hours away from home. I have some family there. I have a best friend who lives there. So I was like, this would be perfect. And then I got in a relationship. And so I really wanted that thing to work. But obviously it was different because I had a plan. And then getting into a relationship, meeting someone and deciding that you want to be in a relationship with that person and you want that to work. Obviously, neither of us were in the mindset that a long distance relationship is what we wanted or that we thought could work for us. And so I recalibrated and I moved into this space. After having been with him for a period of time, I moved into this space thinking, oh my goodness, this is great. And I think I purposefully, well, obviously this side of town is important to me, but we were close. So, you know, in my mind, I'm like, this space is going to be another space for us, another safe space for us to grow and to learn and to be great with one another, to spend quality time with one another. And this space did not represent that at all. It was a space that he did not frequently visit. It was a space that we didn't spend that quality time together. Like those ideas that I had in my head about being curled up on the couch on a rainy Saturday and watching movies and Netflix and ordering in and, you know, binging television shows together or, you know, eating our favorite snacks. Like my idea of being in a relationship and what it would like to be in a relationship in my own space, what I had always kind of dreamed of, how I've always kind of designed and made my home comfortable and accommodating for that purpose, did not happen. And it shut me down. I literally just took books out of boxes and I've been here since November of 2018. It was April of 2020. No one comes over. There's been a few people over, but some of my closest friends have not been in my space. And I was just embarrassed by it. I didn't clean it. I didn't straighten it up. Stuff is just around. I had a couch that was damaged or a piece of furniture that was damaged. That I was embarrassed and ashamed about. I have a record player that I hadn't plugged up. It was really, really bad. And a lot of that is tied in my assessment to what I thought this space was going to be. And then when it wasn't that, I was like, fuck it. And being here and having to spend all this time here has forced me out of that. And I got rid of the piece of furniture that was damaged. And bitch, was that an ordeal trying to get that shit down the stairs by my goddamn self. But I did it. I bought a bookshelf. Today my desk comes. I bought a coffee table that comes today as well. So that I could rearrange. It's a wider coffee table, so it gives me a little bit more space. But the coffee table that I have, which really isn't a coffee table, is going to be used in another corner to put my record player on, so that I can get it off the floor where it is, and that's where my desk is going to be. And so I folded clothes and put them actually in the closet, and they're not thrown on that extra piece of furniture or on the floor or across chairs. I've hung shit up. I feel like I've totally kind of taken my space back, and it's such a great feeling. And that's one of the things that being alone in my space has done for me. And I've gotten back to that place of being happy. And I didn't even realize it, but I have been unhappy for such a long period of time trying to make something work that just didn't work. Doesn't make me a bad person. Doesn't make my ex a bad person. It's just that we didn't work together. But I wanted it to work. And so I was putting all this energy in it, and it was draining me, and it didn't give me any space, any opportunity for anything else, to be creative in any other way, to be selfish in any other way, and do things that make you happy, that make you smile. And so being by myself and getting an opportunity to realize that and starting to make changes in the way that my house is set up and designed has been the greatest thing for me in the last year and a half. No, I'm not working in the arts. I don't know if or when that will ever happen. So I don't know how valuable that degree that I worked really hard to obtain will ever truly be. But having this time, this respite, as I call it, this reset has been very good for me. But that's just me. And I think it's important for us, you know, we always talk about checking in on our strong friends just to see how people really are coping with this. There's so much stimuli in the world, from Twitter to Facebook to the news. There's so much damning information. There's so much conflicting information. There's so much missing information. Like, we really truly don't know what's going on. I'm so glad that I have friends and family that are doctors and they're in the medical field, that I can say, what is your situation? Like, what are you experiencing? What's going on with you? Because they are the people who are seeing it. And the news does not always reflect what we get in terms of media, does not always reflect what's actually happening in these hospitals. So to see videos of doctors and nurses talking about the emotional and mental strain and taxation that they're having to deal with being in that experience every day. You know, I was watching a video, a nurse who actually obviously is a travel nurse, and she had gone to New York, which is not where she is. And, you know, she talked about how much her family didn't want her to come, and, you know, how she felt like she couldn't even call them and tell them what was going on because she felt that she was going to be guilted because they never wanted her to go anyway. And they didn't think it was a good idea. But because she took an oath, because she believes in the value of doing good work and being present, she went. She made that sacrifice. But how painful and how heart-wrenching it's been for her. And, you know, she was like, you know, people, you know, I got to shrug it off, you know, but, you know, you've worked on a patient for a week and a half and you go in the room and they're just dead, you know? That's what people are having to see. And there's so much that we as pedestrians in that world, as bystanders in that world, are not privy to. Yet we have people out here picketing so they can go to the fucking hair salon. It's beyond me. Or standing in line for a pair of Jordans. Like, I literally, when I saw the video, I was like, who the fuck stands in line for gym shoes anymore? Like, all these goddamn apps. Like, I don't think, since I started wearing Jordans, which has been in my adult years, which has been in the last 5 or so years, I ain't stood in no line for nary a release. I've literally gone on an app. If I get the shoe, great. If I don't get the shoe, oh well, you know. I've been able to get shoes post-release just because I guess I got favor. I don't know. But I've never, standing in line, not doing it. And especially not in this situation without any mask on, without any gloves, without observing any real form of social distancing. Like, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And the numbers here in Georgia are going up, so it's crazy. But I'm just saying all that to say that I am now fully aware that this time for me has been very therapeutic, very cathartic, very healing. And that may not be the situation for other people, because maybe other people didn't have anything to heal from. And so I'm really going to take that in consideration when I'm having conversations with people about how they're coping, how they're dealing. Because there are some people who are really, really struggling. Now, obviously, we got hermits, and we have antisocial people, and people who, I was talking to someone, they said, yeah, I'm pretty, when it comes to introvert versus extrovert, I'm 80-20. So, you know, if you're an 80-20 individual, then being in your house really ain't that big deal. But there are things that people miss. I understand missing the gym. I don't understand risking, maybe not your health, but the health of someone else to get there. That I don't understand. I mean, and I said this on the podcast before, like, you know, there are ways to still maintain some level of activity. I have neighbors who are literally fucking working out in the breezeway. You know what I'm saying? So there, you know, are people who are using their weight and buying resistance bands. There's people who are bunny hopping up and down flights of stairs in their fucking house. Like, there are ways to still get things done. But people are so hell bent on getting out there and going to, I mean, like, you can go to the park, you can walk, you can hike, you can buy a bike, you can rent a bike. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are so many different things that you can do to remain active and not put yourself at risk or put other people at risk. I actually watched a video a couple of days ago because I didn't know Derek Blanks. Derek Blanks is a photographer here in Atlanta, and he's one of those people who, it's like, I'm super active, I work out, I eat the right things. And he spent several days infected with COVID-19, but in denial about the symptoms and the actual virus having affected him because of all these things he says that he is. Like, I work out, I eat the right things, so no, I ain't got it, can't be me, it's just a bad cold. You know what I'm saying? Because he didn't have the labored breathing, you know, and different things like that, because of the amount of water he drinks. Like, there are things, there are good habits that he has that made certain elements of the virus less cumbersome for him than others. But he still had the fucking virus for 5 days, which means he was putting other people at risk, even though he was doing just fine. You know, and I'm not trying to be harsh on him, because he literally came on, and I didn't watch the entire video because it was too fucking long and I didn't care. But, you know, he was literally, what caught me was he was a person who, like, I've had so many conversations with people like this, who is active, who does go to the gym, who does work out, who does eat the right things, but still found himself in a situation where he got infected. And because he was in denial, he was going on business as usual, which means he could have put other people at risk. He doesn't know if the person at the airport, if the ticket agent, if the stewardess, or if somebody who was sitting around him didn't get sick or didn't come back with a positive diagnosis because they weren't in contact with him. He doesn't know that while he was in California working, that he didn't possibly come in contact with somebody and infect them, somebody who he would, you know, somebody who was helping him on his shoot or possibly the model on the shoot. And that's just fucking selfish. And so I'm glad that he put the video out. He was apologetic, and he definitely was, you know, being very thankful, very grateful to God that he was able to come out of that thing. But you can't ignore the fact that his ignorance in this stage, you know, in this context, not that he's an ignorant person, but his ignorance to the fact that I could possibly have this thing, like, it could really affect me, a healthy person, could have put other people at risk. And so, you know, I just, you know, my it doesn't cease to amaze me. I wish it did, but people don't surprise me. I'm not surprised when people do what they do. I'm surprised when they don't do things. But with all this is going on, with all everything that's going on in the world, that people are just a little bit more, they aren't thinking. It seems like they aren't thinking. You know, some of the things that are going on in the state of Georgia, some of the things that are going on in the state of Michigan, you know, where you have a governor who is doing her damnedest to just keep her constituents safe. And you have people who are protesting and taking guns to the Capitol building. And I said this in a Facebook post. I was like, you know, let's be clear. If any of these people were African American, even without guns, but tried to take a gun or had a gun and took a gun to the Capitol building where the governor and other legislators are in session, none of us would have walked away from that situation alive. Alive. You know what I'm saying? Now, I'm not just talking about arrested or detained. We won't walk away from that situation alive. And we have all of these people who walked away not only alive, but not even detained. Come on, y'all. That's crazy. That is crazy. So I think that with all of that going on and people seeing all of this and some of the ridiculous videos that I've seen, fights on airplanes, fights in stores. Someone just sent me a article about a security guard at a Family Dollar in Flint who was killed because he asked someone to put on a mask, because I guess Family Dollar was requiring people, you know, who were shopping in the stores to wear a mask, and he was killed, like, because he's doing his job that's an essential job, which puts him at risk. So I just think it's important that we, with all of this, all that's going on, all of the conversations that we're seeing, the conversations that we're having, I think that the conversations that we're having with friends and family and people that we know about how they're being affected by this pandemic, by COVID-19 personally, you know, because they've either lost someone that they know or someone that they were acquainted with. You know, I say a lot of my loss has been 6 degrees of separation. I'm very fortunate that no one in my immediate family or immediate friend circle has found themselves in a situation where they've been affected. But I do know one or two people in my immediate circle who did get a positive diagnosis that are doing much better now. But their work, they're essential workers. They work in the airline profession. I know it's probably a proper word, but it's still morning, so bear with me. But they work, you know, what is the word I want to say? Y'all know what I'm saying. They work for an airline, a major airline. And then the other is in the medical profession. So obviously both of those jobs do put you at risk because you're in constant contact with people, but they're doing much better now. But I definitely don't know anybody in my media circle who has succumbed to the virus. And so I think when you have those conversations, when you start talking to people who have experienced that, who are trying to figure out ways to bury their loved ones who have died during the season, whether they were affected by COVID or not, meaning whether or not their death was COVID related or not, you know, but still having to abide by the laws and the rules and regulations and the stipulations of how things have to be done during this time frame, it's a lot to handle. And so I think it's important for us to just check up on each other and see how we're really doing. Like, yeah, if you get to work from home, it's good. But obviously, you know, I have friends who did have the opportunity to work from home. But as the weeks have collected, Their organizations have said, we got to find y'all something else to do. Like, we can't continue to pay you and you're not actually working. So, you know, those things are changing for people. And I just think that those are things that we need to be cognizant of and sensitive to. If we have people, and I've said this before, of course, so some of this is redundant, but it's just things that I'm thinking while I'm talking. If you know people who work in service industries who are seriously impacted because there really isn't any help for them. major corporations are getting money and bailout and things to help them, but some of these local things are not. So, you know, people who own their own boutiques, who are making their own thing, you know, who make their own things, who are really entrepreneurs in business for themselves, like those people are the ones that are suffering. Remember them. It's Giving Tuesday. So, you know, we normally give to charities and different things like that, but think about somebody who works in a service industry, like your barber or your nail tech, or, well, the nail salons are open. Well, barbershops are open too, but everybody isn't opening back up and everybody isn't available. Like, I need a haircut. And I know that I talked very early on about trying new things, but what I'm not going to try is to cut my own fucking hair. So, and I'm not shaving. I don't have any shavers. I don't have any clippers. I don't have any edgers. And I'm not buying any. I'm going to look just the way that I look until the time where it is safe for me and my barber to both be in the same space with or without a mask. I mean, I would prefer not to wear a mask, but obviously, if we still have to wear a mask in November, we still have to wear a mask in November. I hope to get a haircut before November. But think about those people. Like, he's impacted. He's a family man. And not just his work at the barbershop, but he's a barber. So that means that any work that he would do outside of that space on a set has been halted. So, you know, I thought about him last month and was like, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm blessed. I just got a stimulus check. Let me pass it on. We have friends who are in entertainment. I talked about this with Angela. Like, you know, people are still doing self-tapes and submitting them for possible future roles and possible future production opportunities. But right now, a lot of people aren't working. Think about those people. Broadway shut down. Metropolitan Opera shut down. You know, all of these performance spaces where people who are full-time performers who rely on, you know, us as consumers coming to different shows in order to sustain their living, and they're trying to find ways to be as creative as they possibly can and still make money throughout this time. But it's tough. And because a lot of them are sole proprietors and 1099 workers as opposed to W-2 workers, their stimulus packages were challenged in terms of when they actually got them. They didn't get them when they needed them, or they didn't get them at all, or they didn't get as much as they thought that they were entitled to. So many things going on. Just think about those people on Giving Tuesday, especially if you're in a situation to give and it won't impact you negatively financially. I mean, like, one of the big pluses is I've saved so much money. And while I was talking to my therapist yesterday, she was just like, it just makes you think, what the fuck was I spending money on? Like, you know, I understand that I've definitely had some boost in my income because there's some, you know, obviously the stimulus package and different things like that. But there's money, like, I pay rent and my account is not busted. And it's been a long time since I've been in that situation. And so I'm grateful for that. And so it's allowed me to do a couple of things around the house that I always wanted to do, buy myself an item or two that I wanted to buy and not feel strained. I'm definitely cooking more and trying to be more cognizant of that. My kitchen stays clean all the time. These are things that I would not have given a shit about before this time period. So it's been cool, and I've tried new things. And this is the last thing I'll leave you with, and then I'll let you go because I've been talking forever. I decided to do a virtual speed dating event this past weekend, and it was actually a lot of fun. This is something that I probably wouldn't have considered in any other time. It is definitely something that would have been more intimidating to me in a face-to-face medium, and I know that probably sounds really, really hard to comprehend if you know who I am, but just those insecurities that we all have about how we look, that affects you. And so I probably wouldn't have done a traditional speed dating event, but I did it virtually, and it was a lot of fun, and I had a good time, made some matches. And so I'm exploring and seeing what that's like. So I think that this time has really kind of opened me up, and I just want to, for those individuals who may find themselves kind of struggling or flailing around a little bit, tap into some things that you've always wanted to do, some things that you've been hesitant to do prior to now. I think that you will find some peace in that, some revelation in that, because this might linger on even longer it's already lingered on longer than most have expected, but there's a chance that it will linger even longer. And so you don't want to find yourself being stir crazy. You don't want to find yourself being more anxious because of something that you really can't control. So we need to check on each other more often. A simple text, a call, a FaceTime or a Google Duo or Marco Polo or whatever medium that you use, just to make sure that people are doing well. It's not just about, are you working? Are you exercising or whatever the case is, but how are you really? What is really going on? Mother's Day is this weekend, and my therapist brought this up. Like, I don't really, Mother's Day kind of blows past me at this point, and I still am cognizant to honor my bonus mom. I call my stepmom my bonus mom. I call her mom, actually. So I still honor her because that's important to me. But it's been years since I've spent the time to like reach out to other people in my life that I know are moms, because it's just a difficult day for me. I don't really go on social media. And this year I'm going to be sheltered in place, having to deal with that, having to really, you know, to process that. I'm not the only one. There's lots of people who may have lost their mother earlier this year. So this may be, or last year, which means this may be their year first. It may be somebody who's lost their mom as a result of COVID-19 or lost their mom during this time frame of COVID-19, which of course is added stress. So, you know, be cognizant of that with people and just kind of check on people and see how they're doing, because it might be tough. I can ramble on and on and on and on about this time frame and everything, but I won't. I'm gonna let you guys go. I love y'all for real. Thanks for, you know, sticking with me. Oh, I've really talked today. This is almost 45 minutes. Oh, it's actually more than 45 minutes. Okay, so I'm gonna go. I love y'all for real. Thank you so much for hanging with me. Continue to hang with me. Of course, I'm still working on some things. I'm still gonna have some guests in the upcoming weeks, because, well, we're all sheltered in place, so everybody got this free time. So we're going to figure that out. I'm going to do a book review. I'm reading a book right now. I won't speak more about that because I don't know when I'm going to finish the book. But I'm going to do a book review and possibly bring on my friend Derek, who we're supposed to be reading the book together. And I'm pretty sure he's probably done because he's a reader. But maybe we'll come on and we're kind of talk about different ideas about this book together. And that should be fun because it'll be something different for the both of us. We'll do like our book club via the podcast. Anyway, love y'all for real. Have a wonderful Tuesday, a wonderful week. Continue to stay safe. A representative that I was emailing the other day said this in her tagline: be positive, stay negative. And so I think that it's profound. It's four words, but it means a lot. We have to hold on to any bit of optimism that we can find during this time. So be as positive as you possibly can, but do what is necessary in order to stay negative. I love y'all for real. Peace.